Okay, councillors, it's now just gone 6:30, I think, so we'll start the meeting. This is, of course, the scrutiny of community regeneration, environment and health and the wellbeing committee. Today, 2nd of November. So item number one, apologies for absence.
We have apologies from Councillor Ackroyd, Beach, Killeran, Legg, Shrive and Louise Walker.
Thank you. And item number two, declarations of interest. Declarations of interest. We've all seen the agenda, so anybody? No? Okay, so no declarations of interest. Item number three, to consider any urgent business brought forward to the meeting. And
there are no urgent business.
Thank
Chairman.
You. Okay. Item number four, public minutes of the meeting held on the 22nd September, obviously this year. I'm going to propose that we accept the minutes. I'd like a seconder, please. You got three or four? That's crazy, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. Thank Councillor McGarry will be seconding it. Yeah, thank you. Sorry about that. Okay. So those four. Those against. And abstentions. Okay, thank you very much. Item number five, HS2, Victoria is here with us today. Senior Community Engagement Manager, I hope that is your title. Yes, thank you. She's going to be talking on phase 2A of the HS2. Obviously, she's been invited, so would you like to proceed, please?
Thank you for the invitation. So just to introduce myself, so I'm Victoria Robertson, Senior Community Engagement Manager. So I've been working for HS2 for about 5 years, but in this current phase 2A role since April this year. So my job is to work with the team of engagement managers we've got across phase 2A to make sure that we're keeping local stakeholders, communities informed about what's happening, help them get involved in the project, and that importantly sits around the benefits, the opportunities that HS2 will bring to the area. So I've put a few slides together, more just to keep me on track than anything else, and it just helps give a few dates and things like that that will be helpful for you. So what I was going to go through is a quick overview of where we are with the programme in general, but focusing on phase 2A. And then just look at some of the things that we're doing which might be of particular interest to the borough, and then move on to some of the sort of opportunities that could be worth sort of looking at, being aware of and making most of, really. But I'm more than happy for people to pitch in, ask questions as and when, rather than me just sort of talk at you.
I think so. What normally happens, Victoria, is most people just sort of you do your presentation and then I'll open it up to the councillors to if that's okay, councillors.
Okay, that's great. So I'm not sure how much people know about HS2 in general. So phase one, which is London to Birmingham, that's well underway. Main construction starting, so they started to build the bridges, the tunnels, all those sorts of things. Whereas phase 2A, which starts just north of Fradley and goes up into Crewe, we got Royal Assent in February 2021. So that was basically the time where we've got that all clear to start the works and start really moving forward with the programme. So really on this slide, it's just looking at the last four boxes is where our focus is now. So our teams are developing the design based on what was submitted to Parliament, assuring that going on to the detailed design where we'll look at really the refinement of what has been proposed. But what is really underway at the moment that people will start to see the impact of, will start to see on the ground, is the preparatory works. So that's going to be going on for the next 4 years whilst they continue to sort of refine the actual design of the railway itself, and all that preparatory work feeds into that process. So this just shows the route and some of the key assets we have. So it's a 36-mile stretch. Within that stretch, there's 65 bridges, 17 viaducts, so it's by no means a small project in this part of the world. And we're split into community areas for the community, so each engagement manager has a different community area, which then means that they can focus on making sure that they've got the details and the insights of any challenges or issues in those areas. So you can see, obviously, where the edge of the borough is on that map. But there is work that comes into that as part, it comes into the borough as part of sort of the support of the railway, which I will touch on in a bit. So just to update where we are then, as I mentioned, the main construction works a few years away. That's really going to start 2024. So what we're really concentrating at the moment is the early works or preparatory works. Which is what's happening on the ground, with the aim to actually have the railway operational 2031 to 2034 is the time frame, and that aligns with phase one. So we've been sped up to align and open at the same time as phase one. So we've got some catching up to do, but we're well on track to deliver under that. So this just breaks down what that construction activity looks like, what people will start to see. So you can see from this timeline at the moment, the work that is happening is ground investigations. We've got utility diversions that are starting. Early environmental works are just starting now, mostly surveys, non-intrusive activity, with the site starting next year. And then we've got early civils works, and then main construction starting 2023 onwards, but that first year will be very much design rather than on the ground. So I was going to touch on each of those in a little bit more detail so people can sort of get a feel for what communities will feel and see, and then some of the work that will be happening particularly close to the borough might be impacting local people in this area. So the ground investigations, these are being collected route-wide. There's around 1,200 sites that have been opening up. Most of it is on rural farm landowners' land, so we work very closely with those landowners to minimise the impact where we can and mitigate any disruption. But the main focus of that is to feed into that detailed design that I mentioned, so getting information around the ground conditions so that we know how and the approach that we need to take for building certain assets of the railway. So all that work is continuing at the moment. It started in November 2020 and should finish in the first few months of 2021, so we're looking February, March time for that piece of work to finish. But that's relatively non-intrusive, low levels of traffic on the road, so apart from the specific landowners, most local communities won't really notice and see much of that activity. The utility diversions, so these are the key sort of utilities. There's around 300 that we do have to divert across phase 2A. Some small diversions along the road, whereas some are a bit more extensive, particularly noting the one from Hans Acre to Kings Bromley and the restringing pylon works that are happening there at the moment. But most utility works is at the stage of surveys, so checking the ground and conditions, making sure we know exactly where the current utilities are before we start digging holes and moving things around. That will start later next year probably, but then that will continue over the next 5 years as the programme progresses along the area of the route. And then the early environmental works, so these this is essentially where we're creating new habitats, new environment, new ecology, restoring ecology in new places, to then enable us to then later translocate species from the habitats in the areas that we are having to disrupt from the railway. So we're doing it now to give a few years for those sites to develop so that the local wildlife can move into those sites mostly naturally, and then they'll be maintained by our teams. So there's around 16 areas, over 80 sites, a lot of green infrastructure, for want of a better word, so that can include tree planting, new ponds, new sort of wetland areas, those sorts of things. So we have lots of ecologists and environmentalists who work with us on developing those, and again, a lot of those are on the local landowners, so we work very closely with them to find the right locations that work for both the farms and their access and what they need to do, as well as finding an area that works for the local wildlife that we are unavoidably disrupting. And those sites, again, so at the moment we're doing survey works, so that's going out. We're starting to look for the local ecology, get a feel for what's in those areas, and then the actual site set up. We're starting to possess some of the land over the next few weeks, but the actual sort of creation of those habitats will probably be, or will be, in the second quarter of next year. So there will be a time where people might start to see us put fencing up around those areas just to secure those sites. Then the early civils works. There's a couple of packages of work. So there is the first package, ECW1. I'm trying to avoid acronyms, which we're very guilty of at HS2. So the first one is the junction at 15A500 Hanchoy Junction. So we are doing quite a big programme of junction improvement there. So there has been traffic management there for the last couple of weeks or so to do surveys to then feed into the detailed design for that work, which will be undertaken in terms of the construction element around 2023. And again, we're doing the same with Woodend Lane and the A515 just around Fradley area, and there is traffic management in that location at the moment. There was an overnight closure the other day as part of that work, and that surveys, which will then feed into those sort of junction improvements and changes. And then we also have a second package of work, which is around 20 locations of improving the local road infrastructure. So that could be junctions, putting in roundabouts. Some are temporary, some are permanent changes. And that's all to make sure that we can, the local road network can support the construction traffic that will be coming to the area, that it's safe, and that things like key junctions are not sort of blocked or hazardous as a result of sort of an increase in traffic load. So all those locations have been identified and will be upgraded before any main construction traffic starts on the road. So there will be, again, traffic management in place in some of those places, and in some places we do have to do some short-term road closures as well. And then we go on to the main construction. So we've got the advanced civils works, which will be clearing the land, preparing the sites, and that will start 2023. That will also include things like haul roads, where we'll construct those so that we can take construction traffic off the road wherever it's possible, and also making sure we've got access to some of the sites, so creating those junction access once those sites are all cleared and set up, and that then clears the way for the main construction contractors to come in and start the actual building work of the railway. So, a couple of things I just wanted to flag, really. A few was the Parkgate power connection in particular. I'm not sure if anybody is aware of this or has been previously sort of spoken to about this. But this is essentially to make sure that we've got connection to the grid for two-way. There was conversations and it went through sort of review around the impacts of this in terms of underground versus overground. The decision was that in terms of environmental impacts, the impacts and the land take required and also the cost, the balance of that was that it was the right approach to go overground. So we've taken sort of a strip of land either side, but once it's built, that will all then revert back to sort of agricultural land use once the pylons are all in place, and that's expected to start in 2023. So we've done quite a lot of engagement around that, and there are various assurances around the traffic along the 5234 for communities around sort of Newborough area. So that's sort of one thing to be aware of, and as part of that, we're aware of the Blissfield Reservoir. So we have a number of assurances with that site, which is around making sure that we've done the appropriate bird and risk assessments. We'll be putting in place bird diverters where required as part of those species-specific risk assessments that will be carried out before any work starts. And there's also around making sure that as we plan and design and build this, we look at new ways to further limit the loss of any sort of floodplain grazing in that area as well. So as the design gets developed for this work, all those things will be considered as part of that, so we can try and minimise any impacts around that area particularly. And then the other sort of two key roads were the B5013 and 14. So both of these roads are going to have a realignment. So the B5014, so that will be realigned around 200 metres. It's going to be the same length in terms of journey time. It's going to be to produce an overbridge. And in terms of how we deliver both these realignments, the way we do it is we'll build the road offline, and then there'll be a short-term closure. Generally, it's done overnight, but if it's not possible in terms of safety or what has to be done, it might be a weekend closure where we essentially take the old road offline and create a new road. And for the B5014, that one will continue to exist for maintenance access, but it won't be open to the public. That would just be for sort of HS2 or sort of the network, rail network access. The B5013 will be slightly longer in terms of a new 10 minutes added to journey times for local people, and that will be an underbridge rather than an overbridge for the railway. So that's sort of the key two, but on that side there are some other traffic management activity that we will have to do in those roads surrounding in that area, but again, all the sort of traffic management plans for that activity will be developed as part of the programme that the main works contractors have to deliver, and all that will be looking at things like the timings of any closures, making sure that if it's, you know, it doesn't align to, I don't know, school times, if it's near a school, that we can avoid shutting roads during sort of peak periods, and we can minimise that where possible, but making sure that we can also make sure we deliver the railway and keep our workers who are working in those areas safe while they're doing so. So that is an overview from a programme perspective. So from a community engagement perspective, there's various ways that we're keeping people informed. We work very closely with local authorities, local council, local parish councils, and then again we directly go out and share with communities. Obviously in the world of COVID we've moved to the digital world a little bit more, and we've improved our offer digitally in terms of webinars, local community websites where we share information. We have a mailing list which people sign up to for their specific area, so they can get very specific localised updates on any works that might be happening, and we send out notifications to the local residents. So if there is a road closure or management, they'll get at least 2 weeks' notice and a letter to the door to explain what the work is and why we're doing it. Again, we have our 24-hour help desk that are there all day, every day, even Christmas Day, ready to pick up the phone if there are any issues or any questions that people might have. Now we're starting to go back out face-to-face, recognising that not everybody enjoys online or can get access online with various internet qualities and speeds. So we are doing a bit of a hybrid poach, and we're, at the moment we're doing a series of one-to-one appointments in various sort of village halls and things like that, to offer people to come along, just find out a bit more, ask any questions about their specific impacts. So a couple of things I then wanted to touch on around the benefits and opportunities piece particularly. So we do have a couple of funds that are available. So we have the Community Environment, Local Environment Funds, and the Business Funds, CEF and BLEF as they're called. So these are for communities or business economies that are impacted and disrupted by HS2. And there's a pot of £5 million available for organisations to bid for, and they can apply for. It's all run by an independent charity. There's various levels, so it's between sort of £10,000 to £250,000 that people can bid for. So thinking around the community funds, this could be things like a new restoring a village hall, it could be a new play area for a local community, it could be improving the local cycle network, those sorts of things. And then the business side, it's not for individual business compensation, it's for business organisations, or so it could be the local enterprise partnership, chamber of commerce, local authorities, to bid to have a programme that can, you know, bring people to the area. So it could be, you know, promoting tourism, getting people back onto the high streets. It could be a discount card. We've had one of those in sort of the Chiltern areas for sort of local businesses, as well as things like skills and development for, you know, smaller businesses on various key aspects to help them sort of progress and be sort of market competitive. So there's lots of different things that sit within those funds. So I'd encourage, if you've got any thoughts or ideas on that, to have a look at those in a bit more detail, because there's a good funding pot of money available there. And that only came online in April. So there is, we've had one sort of be approved so far publicly, but we are getting applications through, which is really good to see. But we're, you know, keen to get some more, particularly on the business side. We haven't had any business ones as of yet, so, and I think that's a big opportunity for this area particularly. Our contractors also, in addition to this funding, have community investment requirements set within their contract scope. So again, there's opportunities for them to support activity and charity work. So that could be, you know, providing materials. They've provided materials for schools to create a new community garden. We've done playing it safe workshops where we have a theatre group come in and do a play around health and safety with in mind of the increased, you know, construction traffic that might be in the local area around construction sites, and trying to make it a bit more engaging so that they take those messages, as well as things like Growing Spaces, which is a programme where we do we go into schools and create boxes for growing food and an educational piece around there as well. So there's lots of opportunities for the contractors to step in and help. So where there are charities or schools or community groups that are looking for support to, you know, whether it's paint a village hall or put up something in their garden or whatever, or they're looking for supplies, the contractors can potentially help with that. And again, if they come through, you know, contact someone from the engagement team, so myself, one of the managers, we can try and facilitate that and start that conversation. There's also the Road Safety Fund. So that's £6.5 million in funding that's available. So this is sort of allocated by HS2 or the Department for Transport to the local sort of county council. So Staffordshire County Council have got the biggest proportion of it because we're sort of mostly in Staffordshire. And again, this is around making sure that we leave that legacy of improved road safety, road improvements, and it's down to those local authorities to decide what their priorities are, what they want to do and spend with this money. So again, any sort of key ideas or activity in this space, it's something to sort of flag and lobby for with the County Council. And then local business opportunities. So local business opportunities for me is one of the most exciting things for this area. So we've got over 400,000 supply chain opportunities that will come out of sort of phase one alone. So 2A will create even more. And thinking about where this county is, we're near to phase one in the area of North because it comes up to around Lichfield. There's a lot of opportunities for businesses to get involved both in phase one and 2A. And as an organisation, we set requirements for our contractors to engage with the local market, look to make sure that it's an open, transparent process, that SMEs particularly can are supported and upskilled to be able to get involved in the project. So there's a whole team that work with the procurement leads within HS2 to make sure that any opportunities for local businesses are recognised. They work very closely with the LEPs and the chambers to help support local businesses understand and navigate the supply chain, because it's quite a complicated project, but there's different ways that they could get involved. And with phase 2A, where we're at, we've only got the first few contracts on board, but actually as we start to ramp up over the next couple of years, there's going to be hundreds and thousands of contracts from really, you know, big contracts around delivering, but there's also going to be opportunities for, you know, purchase order contracts. So it might be supplying stationery to our sites, it could be catering services. We're going to need things as well for the local workforce, so accommodation, hotels, all those sorts of things which might not traditionally sit with, you know, when people think of a railway. There's a huge amount of opportunities for different businesses to get involved. And we've started to see that. So, you know, this slide just shows a couple of those examples of different businesses. So the top left, Kai and his team, they're just accommodation providers that saw an opportunity. They had some HS2 sites near to them. They went over to those sites. They actually took an ice cream van to one of the sites on a hot day. All the workers came out and they just, you know, told the workers about their accommodation, made sure that they knew that they were there. And since then, they've been growing their business as more and more workers come in, and they sort of word of mouth, and it's really helped them develop. And then some of the other examples, so Genie Printing, small printing firm, so they've been doing newsletters for one of the contractors, printing maps, those sorts of things. And then the bottom left is sort of a media firm that have been doing and supplying videography, time-lapse footage and security footage for the sites, and they're all based in Staffordshire. So a real big opportunity for businesses of all types and sizes to get involved. And lastly, it's around opportunities for local people. So HS2 is going to create a huge amount of jobs both within HS2 but more broadly the supply chain and that knock-on effect. So just 2A alone, we're expecting 6,500 new jobs to be available, but across the whole project there's around 30,000 jobs that will need to help us build the railway. And we work very closely with the contractors. They all have requirements around things like apprenticeships, workforce job starts, to try and drive sort of more engagement. And again, there's a key focus there on local, so trying to work from the local councils that we're going through rather than looking at resources from further afield. And as part of that, we've got a job brokerage partnership model. So there's a platform where all the opportunities from across the contractors end up in one place, so it's easier for people to find them. But also we work with sort of the jobs and skills teams across the various local authorities to help make sure that we're reaching the local job, the local people who are looking for those local jobs, and we're matching them with what's happening in the area. And they work very closely with various sort of universities, local colleges, and those sorts of things, as well as doing things in schools like STEM sessions to try and encourage people to get involved and start thinking about careers and aspect and things in HS2, because it's going to be here for a while, so there's lots of opportunities for local people to get involved. So that was that was a whistle-stop tour, so hopefully that was helpful, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Victoria. I'll throw it out to councillors. Councillor Hussain.
Thank you, Victoria, for the presentation that's coming in. I would like to ask you, when they started this project, we've been told that 55.7 billion is the exact cost. Now, it's coming close to, I believe, is 98 billion pounds. The reason I'm asking, you know, what we are spending now, we don't want to see our children or grandchildren are paying these debts. Mm-hmm. So is there any clear indications or anything at all where we are heading for? 5 years back, it was 55. Now 98 billion. We're talking about millions and billions, and we don't want to leave anything for them to pay for our own debts.
Absolutely. So in terms of the sort of funding envelope for HS2, yes, it has increased. We've now given ourselves that contingency within that new budget, so that there's an expectation and a drive for us to deliver under that. But this is giving us that wriggle room that we need potentially if, you know, unforeseen circumstances happen. The refresh, it's also worth noting that the initial was based on 2015 figures, I believe, and now it's based on sort of the more sort of, I think, 2020 or 2019 it might be refreshed for. So there is a sort of an inflation related between those two comparisons that needs to be sort of recognised. But the envelope has gone up, but we're now working to make sure that we stick within that, and there's a recognition within government that we need to do that. And that's why, you know, there's been various new governance processes put in place. We've got the HS2 minister. HS2 as an organisation has matured. We're sort of now 10 years old, so we've got that. We've got scrutiny from the Department for Transport to deliver, but we've also got the senior leadership structure in place to make sure that we've got those governance steps and those assurances to drive and make sure we do them within that envelope.
Yeah, of course, yes.
Yeah, if I may, I certainly welcome 4,000 jobs in our county, even more those things. And we just don't want to end up with those low-paid jobs or anything. It doesn't bring any new things for us, especially this town itself. The Burton itself is suffering from so many low-paid jobs. So is there anything precisely available? What sort of jobs you are trying to create or anything? Or is it just in projections or you don't have any specific strategy for it? And second question, if I may ask you as well. I welcome this community impacted funds or anything. Is our town, Burton itself, Burton and Uttoxeter comprises the East Aberdeenshire. Is the Burton qualify for that impacted area? Like ourselves, you know, our wards or our own councils is, allowed to apply for that community funds, which is it 5 million for the Staffordshire County itself?
It's 5 million for the 2A region, yeah. The first question in terms of the jobs that are available, they're very much a huge range, so it's not just going to be the lower skilled jobs. There's opportunities, we're going to have skilled engineers, but there's also a big opportunity around skills development, because some of the activity that's happening on these sites, the technology and the engineering that's needed is very technical. There's a massive skills shortage in that space, so HS2 has a skills team that works with local authorities because we need to bridge that gap. So that could be training for sort of activity on the site in terms of, you know, builders, sort of telehandlers, those sorts of jobs. But there's also the sort of engineering, technical jobs. There's all the environmental jobs that come with it, so ecologists, surveyors, like planning. Sort of the list goes on, really. Community engagement, so comms. There's loads of different opportunities. And within that, then there's the supply chain So all the sort of subcontractors that come on board will then be looking to support and recruit, as you know, HS2 is such a big project. It should bring the opportunity for local businesses to grow and expand as well in their remit. So it's difficult to say what, you know, specific job types and projections as such, but there is a recognition that there's going to be huge amounts of numbers, and that's why we work very closely with sort of local colleges and those sorts of things. So I don't know, I'll admit, I don't know sort of what work is happening in that space, but what I can do is I can take that away and speak to the skills and employment team and see what work they are doing with sort of local colleges in the area, and make sure that they are linked in and sort of looking at the local community around here.
Okay. Kelsey, you're saying, do you want, does anyone else want to, first of all, Councillor Hodgson? Yes. Sorry, Councillor Hussain, I'll come back to you in a minute. Okay.
Yeah, well, we've all seen how much chaos and disruption that HS2 is going to cause to our communities. So apart from the short-term jobs and supplies from local companies, what else are the people of East Staffordshire going to benefit from HS2? Because I can't see a lot, to be honest.
So I'd say the jobs, the business opportunities, yes, are going to be for the project itself, but I think there's also that view that and consideration of that legacy. So we're upskilling businesses, we're upskilling local people, so that then opens the door for, you know, further opportunities for those businesses and people down the line. And HS2 is going to, you know, be here for 10 years or so. So within that, there's a lot of scope for businesses to really grow and expand and then go on to whatever future projects there might be. In terms of sort of the benefits locally from the HS2 and services, so the services for this area, the stops in Stafford and the stops in Stoke, and then obviously Crewe. But in terms of this region, there isn't a direct link that you'd have to get onto the line, either sort of Stafford or in Birmingham. So from that perspective, there is sort of minimal benefit from a transport point of view, but there's the opportunity to make the most of the disruption that we recognise will happen for businesses, people as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Councillor Hodge.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed the fact that Rugeley Power Station was demolished a few months ago, and that was the ideal opportunity place for you to put the power unit. But no, we've got to put it in over near Newburgh, so if I get elected in 2023, that may well be on my patch. And I'm concerned about it because we've now got great big power lines going to be going right across all our agricultural land, our rural communities, you know, and it's a big sacrifice for the local people to take, and they're going to get no benefit from HS2 unless they travel to Stafford or Stoke or Crewe.
Yeah, so I know we did look at sort of the Rugeley power station as an option, and the reasons for that being sort of disregarded from, you know, an engineering point of view or a cost engineering point of view, I don't know in detail, but I can follow up and provide a bit more around sort of the different options that were considered and why we are going through sort of the park gate and the overhead line route, and provide a bit more detail on that. In terms of sort of the activity and the disruption, we'll work very closely with the landowners and minimise that where we can, in terms of the timing of the work, and again, all that land will be given back to the farmers, apart from, you know, the footprint, which you can't sort of farm around. So there will be disruption, but we're hoping that that's, you know, temporary and we can minimise that as much as possible. And again, things like construction traffic on the roads. The roads in that area, it won't be a strategic sort of a main route, so the level of construction traffic will be relatively low. That will, you know, still be noticeable, but all the communities will be sort of informed around work, what they can expect, when in advance, so that we can work with them to identify any concerns they might have, and also look at ways that we can mitigate that and how we can make sure that we're sort of blending it into the landscape as much as we can.
Okay, anyone else? Councillor Grover.
Thank you. A question, I guess a technical question for yourself and a question for the council at this stage as well, which I guess you might want to take back, Mr. Chairman, and come back with an answer. Technical question for you. You mentioned about the footprint once construction has taken place. One of the biggest impacts that's going to affect this area, of course, is not the actual construction of the track. It doesn't cut through our borough like it does in other districts and other boroughs, but it cuts through the corner of it. Is going to be a footprint that you referenced, or actually land sterilisation either side of the track, which will affect the land moving forward. Has there been any progress in reducing the size of the land that sterilised either side of the track or sterilised either side of a power line in years? Could you confirm the size of the land that will be sterilised either side of a track? Because it is a big impact, and it's a big impact on landowners. And in terms of a question for the council, I'd like to understand the council's policy stance on HS2 moving forward. Other councils or districts have made their position clear on HS2. Some have been in favour, some have been against. This council is a member of two authorities that have got diametrically opposed views to HS2. The GBSLEP has been broadly in favour of HS2, and the council's part of the GBSLEP have been in favour of HS2. Stoke and Staffordshire LEP have taken a different viewpoint on HS2 and have been broadly concerned about the impact of HS2, and some organisations within the Stoke and Staffordshire LEP have actually helped fund groups that have been protesting against HS2. So I'd like to understand what this council's policy position is on HS2, whether it's broadly in support or broadly against, and has concerns about HS2 moving forward. But if you can answer the technical question about the land sterilisation, that might be helpful.
In terms of sort of the technical answer, I will have to take that away and I'll speak to the engineers. But in terms of the actual track, do you mean the track or the
Track and the power line?
Yeah.
The structure of the path that would sterilise some land. You've mentioned it's going to go over. Sorry.
You mentioned it's going to go over the land rather than under land. There's a bigger sterilisation impact if it goes under the land, clearly, but there is still some if the cables are above. And the track itself causes some sterilisation from some of the presentations I've had over the years. And I'd like to understand whether there's been some technological advancements in that which reduces the amount of land, or whether it's still the same as it was. I think it was about 23 metres, I'm not sure, either side of the track, and I'd just like to understand whether that's the case or not.
Okay, I can take that away, but sort of as a general comment, I know that what we do and what the engineers are and the design teams are doing now is to look at that, and as a whole, the design, and say how do we minimise, how do we reduce the impact, whether it's by the side of the railway, whether that's environmental impacts, whether we can do some more mitigation planting. So we've got the green corridor that goes either side of the railway, which is very similar at, but more so than sort of HS1, if anybody's sort of been on that and seen that. So I can take it away in terms of the technical side.
And sorry, that was really, I saw some of the, from the presentation, you mentioned about some of the green corridors and the environmental stuff, and I sort of knew that there was some work taking place to try and reduce that footprint. And I wanted to see how successful it was and if there's been a reduction.
Yes, yeah.
Thank you, Councillor Grosvenor. Councillor Clark, you had your hand up, and then I'll take Councillor Barker.
Thank you for the presentation. So one of the questions I have is in regards to the A38 works that have been done at Lichfield. So you mentioned in the presentation that communities are engaged when those works are about to take place to make them aware of them and the impacts and the timelines of that. But Burton, particularly being on the A38 and it being the central corridor, is quite directly impacted by that, but not necessarily in that local community. So more of a question on what is done in terms of identifying those secondary impacts and how they're mitigated, and then what kind of community engagement is being done in an area like Burton to try and divert and alleviate some of the pressures caused by these multi-year roadworks on what is quite a vital transport link with the town?
No, great question. I think, so as part of the requirements that our contractors who are delivering the engagement, so the A38 works as phase one, at the 2AR sort of working in the area on Woodhead Lane, which I know is sort of linked to that in terms of particularly from the Lichfield side rather than the Burton side. But the engagement teams within those contractors, as part of their sort of planning and requirement, they submit that to HS2. They put forward their proposals, and that should consider both those directly affected, those indirectly affected. So not just looking at those sort of local, but also making that consideration for the communities that might be using that route, knowing that a lot of people do kind of to and from between sort of Burton and Lichfield and along that route. What has been taken place, particularly with the A38, I don't know, but I can speak to that team and find out. But also, I think there's a recognition that if we haven't got something right, if we have missed a route to make sure that people in that area are informed, then we'll hold our hands up and say, OK, next time, if we know that you're there, we know that there's a route that we need to be doing, we'll feed that in to those contractors and make sure that next time that they are informing. So I don't know if there is a group or if there was a link in around the A38, whether with this council or otherwise, but if not, we can make sure that both 2A and phase 1 are sort of linked in as part of that, because there will be more works around the A38 which would be useful for you all to be aware of, definitely.
Councillor Barker.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Victoria. Very good. I'm just following on from Councillor Hussain, really, who asked, the second part of his question was, in East Ass, would we be eligible for part of the sort of charitable type funds that you're giving out to communities? And I think, I myself was thinking, well, we're a bit far out to qualify for them, and I know Councillor Hussain asked the question, so, are we going to be able to claim any of that?
Yes. So I think there is a recognition and it is a key requirement that there is a need to demonstrate disruption. So I would say from a local sort of small-scale project, unless they are near to a specific element of work that would disrupt them, whether that's noise, visual, traffic, whatever it might be, then applying for those funds will be challenging. However, there is the strategic fund, which is that broader value, which is above $75,000 to $250,000, and then also the business fund, which is those broader, more strategic ones, which are looking at a broader sort of area and a broader benefit. So I would say that the opportunities within those funds sit with working with sort of organisations across Staffordshire, linking in with other sort of boroughs and districts and saying, well, how can we link together, how can we do something that works for both of our communities and both of our areas, recognising that communities move between the areas, local residents are using the local roads and local impacts, they're travelling between the two, so there is that opportunity to try and think of a bigger picture. So that's what I would suggest having to think about and considering is looking at that bigger picture and how, as a sort of broader region, they can make the most of those funds, because it will be difficult for the smaller local sort of individual activities to demonstrate that disruption. But by no means that doesn't mean that there isn't any, it's just they've got to make sure that they are linking to that. But the groundwork team who manage those funds, again, if people have thoughts or ideas, they can give them that steer and view, but sort of it's independent from us, so we can't sort of influence those decisions or advise as such, but that's where I would say the opportunities for this area are, is to think more broadly and more strategically.
Councillor Walker, did you want to say? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Firstly, I welcome the amount of jobs HS2 has created, and certainly the well-paid skilled jobs that it's bringing, certainly to this area. The A38 would be interesting to find out what's going on there, because it holds me up coming home from work every day. That's just on a personal note. But I think the test is going to be, people say, how's it going to affect this area? I think the test will be when is the extra capacity it's potentially get away with, certainly down the West Coast, or is it HS1 as you'd probably call it, and certainly increase the freight traffic. I mean, freight traffic on the railway is predicted to go out, or not down, in the coming years. So if they're talking about that extra capacity that it will open up down the West Coast, it'll only bring benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. And a great point is that a key part of HS2 is around increasing the capacity. So whilst it's taking those trains and longer journeys off the existing network, that then opens up more space on that existing line for local commuter services, more local services, and more freight services, which then again takes lorries, cars off the road, which both environmentally good, but also good for communities. So, yes, absolutely. And I think that's something that communities can sort of push as well for what those services are and what those local services change to with that extra capacity. It's something that an HS2 gift, but there's that opportunity to then say, we're aware that there's this extra capacity, like what do we want, what services do we want, and sort of lobbying for those sort of the local network rail and the service provider to look at those.
Anyone else? Councillor Hudson?
Yeah, I know it says I'm a bit of a doom and gloom merchant, but I've got villages that will be affected by this. Another concern they have is diversions off the A38. Once the A38 is clogged up, where are we going to divert all this traffic? At the moment, we have a policy that when they get lorries, HGV gets to Kings Bromley, they're not allowed to turn right and come up the A515. However, I know that HS2 vehicles are exempt from that. So this is going to impact quite a lot on my villages, and Philip's the county councillor for the area, and our residents are concerned about it.
So is this so what roads were these in particular? Because I can look into it.
Yeah, so
just to understand.
If the A38 is closed for whatever reason,
yeah,
then they've got to allow the traffic somewhere. So the only way is to become the A515. At the moment, there's a ban on HGVs turning right at King Bromley coming up the A515. However, HS2 vehicles are exempt from that.
Right.
So there will be a big impact on our traffic.
Okay. I can look into the traffic numbers around sort of HS2 lorries and movements in that area and what's predicted and what's expected around the programme of work. But I don't know that off the top of my head. But I can speak to the local manager and the local sort of delivery teams around that and what's been done to sort of look at alternatives to try and minimise those movements as much as we can.
Thank you. I echo actually what Councillor Hudson is saying, because we have an issue in the area that I represent where we've had a building site and some of the lorries turn up and they're not meant to go through a certain area, but they do. So how are you going to stop that? Because I totally understand what they're saying.
So if there's, whether it's an assurance or agreement that they, they should be going through a certain road or they shouldn't be going down that certain road, that's an issue that we need to address with the contractors. So wherever that's seen or noted, feeding that to us so that we can investigate and make sure that whichever contractor is sort of informed that that's not, that they're either not allowed to do that, make sure that message is reinforced, but also where, if that activity is something that is an ongoing problem, that we take the appropriate action to work
to
with the contractors to stop it.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So if it is a case that lorries are going down places where it's been agreed they shouldn't be, so you raise that directly with us, it's something we will then pick up with the contractors.
I think it's also, sorry, Victoria, it's also timings as well, because, these lorries, they turn up at ridiculous times and they sit waiting, and I think that's another, Councillor Atkins, you can say what you wish.
Yeah, indeed, quite interesting sitting listening. as when I was leader of the county council, we were involved with HS2 and 2A and 2B and all the consultations. One of the difficulties is at what stage each locality is, because you've got the first phase, HS2, is actually under construction. And so those communities are pretty well knowing where they are. 2A, and so part of my patch is obviously Abbots Bromley, and they're directly affected by the Parkgate electric extension when it was going to come from Rugeley. So they're very much campaigning about that, or they're switching in 2A from campaign mode to almost when it goes through Parliament to accepting them where they are. And then 2B is very much up in the air. And we, you know, it may be javelin trains come down the cat line, or it's built as it is, but then there's Toten and what happens there, and East Midlands Airport and everything else. But so what I find very strange, Jane, is there's for the people that we represent, is all of these communities are at different stages. There will be jobs, you know, there'll be young people who want to have a job and they need to get trained and all the rest of it. There are some communities that are being directly affected, may be directly affected, or could be affected. And I am aware, as a county councillor, there's a planning application coming in at Utoxeter Quarry to clean 200,000 tonnes of limestone a year for HS2. It will come from Calden Low down to the quarry and then on to wherever it is. So that is, I am aware that there's a planning application. There isn't a planning application in yet. And the quarry liaison committee, which is where it popped up, hasn't had a meeting. So, you know, the meeting that was supposed to happen last...
Must be declared an interest because I'm on.
Yeah, it didn't actually happen. So I think communities need help in understanding where they actually are, because they're all at different stages. I've not thought about the community fund. There are organisations in Abbots Bromley will be directly affected by this, and they ought to be putting bids into the community fund. But I know they're not aware. So, but they're probably protesting still. So it's where, you know, they'll feel that they're a traitor in applying for a community fund when they're still campaigning against it. And I know, I'm picking up what Richard Grosvenor said about the council's attitude to it. You know, it took me ages to come up with a policy for the county council, which Saeed has reminded me of, that everybody could support. So we were against HS2. That was the position. But we would make sure our residents' voices were heard. We'd minimise the environmental impact wherever we could and capture the maximum economic advantage if there was any. So, you know, I had to steer it through. And that's
like
what
to
the
come
policy
back on that,
is.
Victoria, would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point around communities understanding where they are and where the project is, and I think particularly in that area, because there is that interface of phase 1 and 2A, right. It is that, you know, that difference. Some people are impacted by both, and trying to understand it and sort of navigate their way around that can be challenging. So it is something that I have picked up, and as a team we are looking at how we help with that how we're building that railway piece, so those timelines, that understanding of the programme of what to expect when. So it's not only saying you're going to be impacted by this work, but it's understanding what will be happening, what order, why it's going to happen in that order, and give them that idea of time frame. So from a 2A perspective, they're not going to see all that construction traffic on the road till 2024, but what they will see is this. So that is a piece of work that we are trying to deliver and get that message out there. So any sort of idea, support, input that would help us to make sure that we are reaching that, if there is anything that we are missing, then I'm more than happy to take that and see what we can do.
There's another piece of work, Chairman, that councils ought to be aware of, and that is how you get to the stations to catch the trains in the future. So Midlands Connect work on things like the North Midlands Manufacturing Corridor is vitally important. And that is making sure that the rail links and the road links from Crewe to Towton, if that is the 2B station, are in place. It's a massive project, and I know the work's been done, but I've never seen the feasibility study. You know, so, you know, in Burton A38, yeah, but there's some other bigger things, and it's how do you get, and so the question is, how do you get to the station? And I noticed the 501314 bridges and whatever, and the delays. Quite a lot of people in Utoxeter use Rugeley Station to catch the North London, Northwest Railway Line to get to London and Euston. So if the road's shut for days, they won't be able to catch the train, and they'll have to have alternatives. So there's those three dreaded words in the railway world, which is replacement bus service. I'd like to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah, so for the road closure piece, there wouldn't be closures for days. Obviously, that programme needs to be developed by the contractor in terms of the specifics, but the closures would always be sort of weekends, night times, if at all needed, and those sort of realignments would happen offline, and so that it's sort of short time scales, so that we're not sort of cutting people off for long periods of time. I think the integration piece is really important. We do have a team that sort of look at that and work with local councils, local organisations to identify where those touch points or those potential links are with local transport networks and those sorts of things, to make sure that journey experience from door to door is viable, because it's often when you speak about using local transport and why people don't use local transport, it's those last few miles that is always the challenge for people. So there is a whole piece that looks at that at HS2, so I can look at where that is for this area and 2A. I've seen some stuff, but I'm not sure sort of what conversations have been had and when and where. But we can definitely sort of loop you into that when the time sort of is right.
Councillor Hussain.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. I just want to express our position as a county councillor. If I go back, we were opposing this, and we opposed this one, I think, unanimously in this council chamber. They opposed this one.
Councillor Hussain, I know you are here as a borough councillor. So yeah. Just, I know, I understand what you're saying.
The reason I got twin hats.
Indeed.
The reason behind it, we got the priority was people's housing issue, or the ticking time bomb now. This climate emergency, what's going on? Is every indication shows we are going to 3 degrees Celsius instead of 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's why we voted against it. We got our priority, other things as well. Okay. Well, the problem is that we don't, make laws from the House of Commons. We can just express our dismay and then things like that. However, there was one saying that if you cannot defeat them, join with them. So we are not joining with them, but we will carry on our fight from our own positions. I would like to convey two concerns through you, actually, through your higher authority, or yourself, if you can, that we don't want to be in a position that for the skills jobs, you create the jobs in here, then you've got to get the people from East Europe or somewhere from Asia or anything, like lorry drivers or anything. So I urge you what you can do to ensure that you can facilitate proper skills and training locally, so that our local youngsters and local people can have the opportunity to get this high-skill job as well.
I think we did talk about that. I think that was mentioned, wasn't it, to be fair?
Absolutely. And the focus is on local and working locally with local organisations to do that. So what I can do, I can I can provide some further detail on that for you from the local skills employment education manager who worked in this area, and then from the back of that, it would be useful to get him to come along and talk to you in a bit more detail on that specifically. Be more than happy to. And he's always keen to sort of find new groups and organisations to try and drive some of those improvements and those links with, you know, the youth, and making sure that those opportunities are reaching the right communities and the right organisations.
Thank you. I'm going to move on now. I think thank you, Victoria, for you know, a really good presentation. We've had quite a few of the different people here, councillors, so thank you very much. Would you share your slides with us as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll follow up. I'll share. Monica's got the slides.
Already, so that's good.
So
brilliant.
Monica can share the slides, and I'll follow up with some more information that you can then circulate.
Lovely.
If I share that with you and Andrea, then I can make sure that that gets you.
Okay. Thank
and, yeah,
you.
Any other questions that people have that they want to follow up with, I'm more than happy to help.
Okay, thank you very, very much.
Brilliant.
You are free to go, if you wish.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Will you email me with that question? And I certainly will do. Yes, of course. It may be an idea to CC the leader and different. Yep, that's fine. I don't mind doing that. Thank you, Monica. Okay, we're going to move on then to item number 6, which is the update from the Health and Care Overview Scrutiny Committee, Staffordshire County Council. So, Councillor Atkins, when you're finished.
Me?
Indeed.
Had a recent meeting of the Health Scrutiny Committee, and there were some presentations which had been forwarded to two members, and then we had a discussion about various things that were going on. Really, there were updates on the difficult decisions and all that, and your chairman gave a feedback of what you're doing on the two themes. And so that was welcomed. And then we looked at the work programme. Since then, there's been an email received, which I've sent to county councillors, and I really ought to, I think you may have had it, about some Better Health Staffordshire and two workshops that are coming up on Teams links, and recommend that you do that. One's about consequences and realities of obesity in the local area, and the other is the whole systems approach, and obesity is part of a wider system. Obesity is in the county health programmes, health scrutiny committees work programmes for I think about February, but it did just trigger on after the meeting a thought process that I had, and I've shared it with the chairman of the county scrutiny committee and Anne Egler and Paul Northcote, who are the vice chairman. We used to have a program called, well, we did have a program, we have a program called Healthy Schools, which there were about 200 and something schools in Staffordshire involved with it. There's only 9 now, 2 of which are in Burton. And if you ever look at the Healthy Schools website, which is run by Leeds, it's hosted by Leeds City Council and, I've got to think carefully now, East Sussex County Council. There's seven programmes there that schools can get involved with. I've no idea why schools have stopped doing it, because it fits all of the ethos that we would like our children to have, and it gets further upstream. So it's quite an interesting website to look at, and I'll see what Jeremy Pert as chairman does with it. I did say that there was a document done probably about 12 years ago. I would imagine that as the school support service changed 10 years ago and was handed over to Intrust, that they stopped the support within Intrust for the schools, and the schools have just melted away. Even though the whole thing is still there, and I think the problem is they have to pay Leeds City Council a service level agreement to get the auditing work done and everything else. So with tight budgets, they may have decided they've got other priorities, but certainly the Healthy Schools programme is something that fits. So I'm trying to get scrutiny from the, because there are two vice chairmen. One looks at what's happened, and one looks at what might we can do to do things better in the future. So there's, you're the first to hear what I've suggested to the chairman and vice chairman since. But I thought, that there wasn't a lot to report back from the last meeting.
Okay. Any questions for Councillor Atkins?
I can make you all aware that Burton Albion launched their new health programme last Wednesday. Their health in the community, there's quite a lot happening there. So that there's a lot happening in Burton and in Toxeter.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. If Councillor Hussein.
Thank you, Chair. As usual, you are very generous. Thank you.
This is another item. So
of the problem is it's rather worrying actually that if the number shrink to number only nine schools there. Yeah. And one of the problem with the great initiatives which was before as well, that academy and the schools and everything, it's very hard to echo this one. That will you agree that from the county's initiatives to the academy stage as well, because we don't have. The county, as a county, doesn't have any direct impact or anything on the academies. This is one issue, and somebody is very hard to convert them again to academy to the county controlled school as well. And also, you mentioned about the obesity as well. And, is there any chance to find it out? What's the health impact on this poor housing, especially the area we represent in Enid Burton as well? I will welcome any comment on this, please.
Yeah, the... Well?
Yes, you are.
There's a couple of things there. One is that in some ways, with the Academy Trust, it makes life easier. I did raise it at... we had a meeting earlier in the week with Wayne and... I've forgotten the name. Thompson. Sarah Thompson? Was it? We'll get used to it. Yeah, we've got a new early year children's services lead in East Staffordshire. I did raise this with them, and what Wayne said was that obviously we only have influence on schools that aren't in Academy Trust. But the Academy Trust, there are two big ones, which is one is the Toxeter Learning Trust, which has gathered up many schools in that pyramid, and the John Taylor, which has gathered up many in that. So I think there's a piece of work there about going back to these Academy Trusts and getting them interested in it. Housing is a key part of health. I've tried to do it in the Utoxeter. Dr. David Atherton, who's the new chairman of the Primary Care Network, is it? Yeah, is trying to do something a little bit different. And I was talking to him the other day, and I said one of the problems is you get the usual suspects round the table who are dealing with the issues of today, but there's another issue that needs to be faced, which is the issues of tomorrow. And the healthy schools one is one good way of dealing with that, but the other one is getting partners like Trent and Dove and other housing associations around the table, because they have got a key part. I'll guarantee that if you've got all the stakeholders or partners in an area, I hate that word, stakeholders, partners in an area together, and they've started talking about the issues that they've got, I'll guarantee the same names crop up. I'll absolutely guarantee it, because there's community safety and bad behaviour goes along with all the other things that are in life. So, you know, we ought to just, you know, it affects us all. So that's my answer, sorry.
Thank you, Councillor Atkins. Okay, I think we'll move on, I think. Okay, if as long as it is regarding e-staffs and so on, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Atkins mentions about Dr. David Atkins, and he had a tremendous job in COVID-19 issues in my area, especially.
Okay.
And I would propose to, through you, Chair, that in future meetings, if there are any chance to invite Dr. David Atherton. Yes. He was there. If it is possible, and I think we can get something positive intervention.
Monica's making a note of that.
And
so,
also the same note, Chair, that we've got a huge frustrations in the community about the GP services as well. But through you, Chair, I would like to say that doctors dedicated their whole lives to serve our community and the people. And it will be unwise to just point out for the, you know, what's going on, to, you know, make them liable for it, because it's not the, you know, quality of what the service they're doing, is the quantity what they're facing. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Hussain. Okay. Thank you, Councillor Atkins. Okay, we're going to move on then. So item number 7, which is the health scrutiny working groups, which was really proposed by Councillor Clark. So I'm going to ask Councillor Clark to lead on this.
Thank you, Chair. So these were the two proposed scrutiny working groups that came out of the lengthy discussions at our last meeting. One in regards to the impact of health for around GP access, and then one around the impact of COVID-19 on health in East Staffordshire. And I think, to Councillor Hussain's point then, the one around GP access will more than likely involve multiple stakeholders, look into the causes and the current pressures being felt in East Staffordshire. And I believe, based on Councillor Grosvenor's comments in the last meeting, that a report was previously done on this, so more than likely revising and updating that, and also probably as a useful benchmarking in from the recommendations of that report to now, what progress has or hasn't been made. In regards to the second one on the impact of COVID-19 on health in East Staffordshire, the topic and the idea of that one was to look at where has been impacted by COVID-19 in East Staffordshire, marry that up with the recent census data and the economic and social demographic data that we have across the borough to see what are the trends that were identified. And I think with that one as well, it also then ties into what specific schemes were ran in those areas, again, to Councillor Hussain's points, in specific communities, and what learnings can be taken from that. And I think the outcomes of that report would be to inform or better inform the borough, or bring up to date and raise light on some of those challenges we have in areas such as in Inner Burton, and what say poorer backgrounds or different types of communities, the direct health impacts they have, and how solving and tackling those can help alleviate those pressures. So that's the background to both of those. Happy to take any questions on those or any comments. But I suppose the next point then, through you, Chair, is appointed members who would be happy to take part in either of those reviews and look at those topics.
So what I have done, I've asked obviously yourself to do the first the first one, and I've asked Councillor Beach, even though she's not here at the moment, to do the second. What I will ask is if members would like to be on either of those groups, and I know there's quite a few people not here, and Councillor Walker, Louise, as is, I would like her at least definitely to be on one of those because of her, you know, experience in particular. Councillor McGarry.
Thank you, Chair. Did you just say that Councillor Beach was going for one of those or both?
No, just the one.
Because is it the COVID-19 one?
Yes, indeed. That's right, yes.
Well, both myself and Councillor Gould will go on that one as well.
Excellent. You. Okay. Yep. Councillor Walker, yes?
Yeah, before we get on to the working groups, I welcome anything that is going to improve the health, especially in the wards in Inner Burton, which are suffering, and they are suffering badly. We've already visited this. We visited many of these issues. They all want revisiting, from fly tipping to antisocial behaviours on the increase to GP surgeries. We've already visited, but again, where we thought there was improvements. It's not just Gordon Street we're talking now. There's several GP surgeries that are being reported as quite poor, and people can't get access. And most of them belong to these wards in Inner Burton, where the health is probably at the poorest. But there's many, many issues that need to be covered in this. And I'll go back to 2020, March 23, 2020. I wrote to every single councillor and the chief executive at the start of this pandemic, asking what we were going to do about poor housing stock in this town, because the damp and the poor conditions and overcrowding that were being reported are because there was already respiratory problems being flagged up by the CCG when they come into this very scrutiny committee, saying that they were seeing respiratory problems and it was on the increase in this town. Now, I wrote to every councillor and the chief executive March 23rd. I didn't get an answer off anybody saying this is what's coming our way. It's come our way. We're here. We're now. It's reality. And I don't know whether anybody drove through Burton, and I'm sure it's across East Staffordshire, but if anybody particularly drove through Burton on Sunday, it was underwater, and you've only got to go round the corner here to Berkeley Street. It was right across the road. We had reports, and I've got it on my phone, where a lady wrote messages back when we put it on social media, the photographs of what was happening in this town. And she sent us a message saying that on that particular day, there was water going through houses in Berkeley Street, through the doors. There was drainage covers coming up, sewage coming out into the garden, into the houses. She'd been ringing three or four times, and there's three county councillors in this room, so I hope they take heed with this. They rung asking what was going to happen. They were rung asking for help. They were passed from pillar to post. Nobody was listening to them. Yet there was water going in the houses. There was sewage coming out of the drains. Now, if you want to look at poor health, that's the place to start, because if that's not a breeding ground, nothing else is. And what does damp do? Dampness causes COVID. I hear now in East Staffordshire, people are not dying from COVID, they're dying with COVID now. This is the mindset we're sinking into. So the sooner this is done, the sooner we get people looking into it and the results are flagged up, the better it is for the poorer communities in this town, because we're letting them down badly. And this scrutiny committee is called, what are we, environmental health and wellbeing. Mm-hmm. It's all those things that we should be looking at, and we're not. We're just talking about them. And I welcome it, and I hope it does flag up the concerns that we have through the inner wards of this town. Deprivation that we have.
Yeah, Councillor Walker, I hope then you're going to join one of the...
Just to answer your question, I hope the other councillor Walker is on both of them because of her experience and knowledge.
Happy for her to be on whichever she wishes. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yes, not a problem.
Brilliant. That's lovely. Okay. Councillor Clark.
Just to come back on Councillor Walker's point, I think one of the other things that this scrutiny committee can always look into doing is calling cabinet members either from East Attleborough Council or the County Council to come to the scrutiny committee and answer questions. I know a few months back we had the cabinet member responsible for highways come in, and yeah, the state of the roads and the flooding was ridiculous over the weekend. But that is also an option of something we could possibly do via you, Chair, if there was a feeling to do such in the interim of also doing these reports.
Yeah. Councillor Grosvenor.
Yeah. Councillor Clark's just referenced calling in various cabinet members. A lot of what Councillor Walker's referred to and a lot of the issues that we face can only be solved from a national policy perspective. So I'm wondering whether or not a committee would like to call on the MP as well to discuss with the MP the issues that we've got around sort of GP access, health, housing, the flooding, and some of the issues that we're facing in Burton. So the MP could take about, probably a Thursday evening if she's, you know, in Westminster. The MP could answer some of the questions and take concerns back from the Health Scrutiny Committee and deal with them from a national government perspective as well.
I think I can't see, we'll invite her. I think I can see Monica making a note of that as well, so yeah. Okay. Councillor Clark, is that you done now? Yeah? Okay, thank you very much. Of Councillor Clark? You can.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, through you, Chair, can the Councillor Clark recognise the immediate challenge we got in our hands is the COVID boosters? And there are so many people, there are so many vaccine or COVID denier in our communities as well. So will you, in your report, or will you, through your task force, emphasise on the COVID vaccines as well? And we can facilitate our own COVID clinic and we can work together with you and on this as well.
No, Councillor is saying, you know, be on one of the committees, one of the subcommittees, should I say. That would be great. Okay, I think we'll move on now. Thank you, Councillor Clark, for presenting that. Item number 8, scrutiny reviews and updates. Mike, over to you.
Yes, the two scrutiny updates. At the moment, we've got the community engagement piece. We have a draft report that's shared for members just in time. And by members just updating. That's the first one. The second one, with the waste management review, we have a series of pieces of information that we've managed to pull together. It's now just the case of liaising with the other scrutiny committee group, who are also doing the basis on the waste review, to bring those two together so we've got one single report. So it's now a case of just bringing those two separate items into one. So we'll be setting that up.
And we are waiting for some information from Councillor Clark, is that right? And I'm just thinking, trying to sort of.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for a couple of information, pieces of information regarding reviews that we've been doing into what I describe as a desktop exercise. So, what we did was look at some of the data that we as a council possess around waste and recycling, and we looked at the West Midlands. The SIP for Nearest group and some of our other neighbours within in Staffordshire, and we asked members to go away and do a bit of desktop research and look at websites. We just need Councillor Clark just to complete their two pieces.
And then we're almost ready, aren't we, for so the sooner that's done the better. I will chat with Councillor Legg as well. Yeah. Okay, any questions for Mike at all? Nope. Excellent. Okay, thank you, Mike. Okay, item number 9, which is the public executive decision records. We've all seen them. It is just to be noted. Councillor Walker.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you'll have to bear with me because I rushed out and I forgot my laptop and the reports were on there. But if I remember rightly, is it these the ones with, and I can't even remember the name of the charity now, the one that deals with the warmer homes and advice on heating, where they said they were going to stop paying, they were going to stop giving a service to East Staffordshire because they can, demand was that great, they can only sort of give advice to the boroughs that have been paying into that service, and now the cabinet have decided to give £4,000 for a telephone helpline, and it's going to be capped at £4,000. I can't remember. I rushed out and I haven't got. Yes, fuel poverty, yes. Yeah.
Hang on.
Fuel poverty, there you go.
Oh, I've got two. You've got two of them. It's like buses.
Thank you for that, Councillor Grosvenor. Councillor Walker, so you're looking at one of the laptops now, so...
This one, sorry. Yeah, beat the cold and say it's what it indicates is that East Staffordshire have not been paying into the charity or organisation, and we're now having to pay £4,000, and it's going to be capped at £4,000. Well, the organisation says demand's increasing. Because we know what's going on in this town, whether we care to sort of take note is a different story. But my question is, and it might be what I'm trying to probably get to, is we might be worthwhile getting the cabinet member in here to ask him if £4,000 is enough and what happens if demand goes up, because we've got the perfect storm coming, whether we like it or not, it's heading our way. What happens when that £4,000 eaten up? Is nobody going to get any advice?
So, who is the cabinet member for that? Is that? Thank you. Okay, we'll ask him to come in. There's no reason why not.
Thank you,
Councillor Clark.
Just as part of that, and to echo the concerns of that, it would also be useful as part of that get information in regards to the cost implications of it and why the decision was taken to limit that service. Basically, I think it would be worthwhile the cabinet member come in with the information rather than a written response if possible.
Perhaps Councillor Peters could also come with some information with regards to how that service is operated in neighbouring districts where it's currently taking place as well, to establish, you know, whether or not we're getting a different service or what the impact is on those districts as well. Because it is operated in, I think it's Tamworth and Lichfield and South Staffordshire and places like that.
But not here.
No.
Yeah. Okay. I can see Monica's making a note of that as well, so that's good. Excellent.